One of the things Blomqvist did when he realized that his mobile was bugged was to send Cortez out to buy some used handsets. Cortez bought a job lot of Ericsson T10s for a song. Blomqvist then opened some anonymous cash card accounts on Comviq and distributed the mobiles to Ericsson, Cortez, Giannini, Malm, and Armansky, keeping one for himself. They were to be used only for conversations that absolutely must not be overheard. Day-to-day stuff they could and should do on their own mobiles, which meant that they all had to carry two mobiles with them. Cortez had the weekend shift, and Blomqvist found him again in the office in the evening. Since the murder of Zalachenko, Blomqvist had devised a 24/7 roster so that Millennium's office was always staffed and someone slept there every night. The roster included himself, Cortez, Ericsson, and Malm. Lotta Karim was notoriously afraid of the dark and would never for the life of her have agreed to be by herself overnight at the office. Nielsen was not afraid of the dark, but she worked so furiously on her projects that she was encouraged to go home when the day was done. Magnusson was getting on in years and as advertising manager had nothing to do with the editorial side. He was also about to go on vacation.
"Anything new?"
"Nothing special," Cortez said. "Today is all about May 1st, naturally enough."
"I'm going to be here for a couple of hours," Blomqvist told him. "Take a break and come back around 9.
After Cortez left, Blomqvist got out his anonymous mobile and called Daniel Olsen, a freelance journalist in Göteborg. Over the years, Millennium had published several of his articles, and Blomqvist had great faith in his ability to gather background material.
"Hi, Daniel. Mikael Blomqvist here. Can you talk?"
"Sure.
I need someone for a research job. You can bill us for 5 days and you don't have to produce an article at the end of it. Well, you can write an article on the subject if you want and we'll publish it, but it's the research we're after."
Fine, tell me."
"It's sensitive. You can't discuss this with anyone except me, and you can communicate with me only via Hotmail. You must not even mention that you're doing research for Millennium."
"This sounds like fun. What are you looking for?"
"I want you to do a workplace report on Sahlgrenska Hospital. We're calling the report ER. And it's to look at the differences between reality and the TV series. I want you to go to the hospital and observe the work in the emergency ward and the intensive care unit for a couple of days. Talk with doctors, nurses and cleaners, everybody who works there, in fact. What are their working conditions like? What do they actually do? That sort of stuff. Photographs too, of course."
"Intensive care?" Olsen said.
"Exactly. I want you to focus on the follow-up care given to severely injured patients in Corridor 11C. I want to know the whole layout of the corridor. Who works there, what they look like, and what sort of background they have."
"Unless I'm mistaken, a certain Lisbeth Salander is a patient on 11C.
Olsen was not born yesterday.
"How interesting," Blomqvist said. "Find out which room she's in, who's in the neighbouring rooms, and what the routines are in that section."
"I have a feeling that this story is going to be about something altogether different," Olsen said.
"As I said, all I want is the research you come up with."
They exchanged Hotmail addresses. Salander was lying on her back on the floor when Nurse Marianne came in.
"Hmm," she said, thereby indicating her doubts about the wisdom of this style of conduct in the intensive care unit. But it was, she accepted, her patient's only exercise space.
Salander was sweating. She had spent 30 minutes trying to do arm lifts, stretches, and sit-ups on the recommendation of her physical therapist. She had a long list of the movements she was to perform each day to strengthen the muscles in her shoulder and hip in the wake of her operation 3 weeks earlier. She was breathing hard and felt wretchedly out of shape. She tired easily and her left shoulder was tight and hurt at the very least effort. But she was on the path to recovery. The headaches that had tormented her after surgery had subsided and came back only sporadically. She realized that she was sufficiently recovered now that she could have walked out of the hospital, or at any rate hobbled out, if that had been possible. But it was not. First of all, the doctors had not yet declared her fit, and second, the door to her room was always locked and guarded by a fucking hitman from Securitas, who sat on his chair in the corridor. She was healthy enough to be moved to a normal rehabilitation ward, but after going back and forth about this, the police and hospital administration had agreed that Salander should remain in room 18 for the time being. The room was easier to guard. There was round-the-clock staff close by, and the room was at the end of an L-shaped corridor.
and in Corridor 11C the staff were security-conscious after the killing of Zalachenko. They were familiar with her situation. Better not to move her to a new ward with new routines. Her stay at Salgrenska was in any case going to come to an end in a few more weeks. As soon as the doctors discharged her, she would be transferred to Kronoberg Prison in Stockholm to await trial, and the person who would decide when it was time for that was Dr. Jonasson. It was 10 days after the shooting in Gåseberga before Dr. Jonasson gave permission for the police to conduct their first real interview, which Giannini viewed as being to Salander's advantage. Unfortunately, Dr. Jonasson had made it difficult even for Giannini to have access to her client, and that was annoying. After the tumult of Zalachenko's murder and Guldberg's attempted suicide, Jonasson had done an evaluation of Salander's condition. He took into account that Salander must be under a great deal of stress as the suspect for 3 murders, plus the near-fatal assault on her late father. Jonasson had no idea whether she was guilty or innocent, and as a doctor he was not the least bit interested in the answer to that question. He simply concluded that Salander was suffering from stress, that she had been shot 3 times, and that 1 bullet had entered her brain and almost killed her. She had a fever that would not abate, and she had severe headaches. He had played it safe. Murder suspect or not, she was his patient, and his job was to make sure she got well. So he filled out a no-visitors form that had no connection whatsoever to the one that was set in place by the prosecutor. He prescribed various medications and complete bed rest. But Jonasson also realized that isolation was an inhumane way of punishing people. In fact, it bordered on torture. No one felt good when they were separated from all their friends, so he decided that Salander's lawyer should serve as a proxy friend. He had a serious talk with Giannini and explained that she could have access to Salander for 1 hour a day. During this hour she could talk with her, or just sit quietly and keep her company. But their conversations should not deal with Salander's problems or impending legal battles. Elizabeth Salander was shot in the head and was very seriously injured, he explained. I think she's out of danger, but there is always a risk of bleeding or some other complication. She needs to rest, and she has to have time to heal. Only when that has happened can she begin to confront her legal problems. Giannini understood Dr. Jonasson's reasoning. She had some general conversations with Salander and hinted at the outline of the strategy that she and Blomqvist had planned, but Salander was simply so drugged and exhausted that she would fall asleep while Giannini was speaking.